You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Hi everyone, Paul here, and just a quick message from me to let you know that if you are looking to improve the performance of your team, no matter whether it is a work, sporting or community one, then we've developed some tools to help. On the website, you will find our Thriving Teams Diagnostic, which uses insights from the more than 200 great coaches we have interviewed to challenge you with a series of questions to help you understand how your team is performing. It's free and only takes a few minutes to complete. If you'd like to know more, you can check out our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Lessons from the Great Coaches podcast.
I've learned that you don't do it alone.
You learn so many different things from so many different coaches.
That's an elite learning environment.
Failure is not a problem. How you deal with it is a problem.
How to be resilient.
How important it is to infuse joy in the process of learning.
To be a good coach, you've got to give more than you take.
What an interesting life it is to be a leader.
Hello and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast, where we believe that there is no algorithm for leadership. And so we interview great sports coaches from around the world to try and find ideas to help all of us be better leaders. Our great coach on this episode is Doug McLean. Doug has joined us before. He's a former ice hockey head coach, GM, and sportscaster, and he's just written a terrific new book called Draft Day: How Hockey Teams Pick Winners or Get Left Behind. Doug is a great storyteller, and some of the highlights from our discussion were his view on the importance of scouting staff and how in ice hockey they have to cover Canada, the USA, and key parts of Europe like Czech Republic, Slovenia, Slovakia, Sweden, Finland, and Russia. How he talks about the tension between scouting and analytics and describes analytics as the salt and pepper you put on your meal. And the story he tells about his biggest draft mistake and how it ended up costing him personally $30 million. This is a fun conversation about a great book, regardless of whether you know much about ice hockey. And I hope you enjoy it as much as we did. And just before we go to the interview, today's podcast is brought to you by the Macquarie University Business School's MBA program. Designed to empower, challenge, and transform, the Macquarie MBA gives you the business skills and knowledge you need to succeed in an evolving global economy. The program bridges the gap between theory and real-world application, bringing together world-leading professors, executives, and industry partners to teach you how business can be used for good. I have just started working with the team at Macquarie on some projects and can attest to the quality of the people and material. To find out more, search for Macquarie University Business School's MBA. And now, please enjoy our interview with Doug McLean.
You're listening to the Lessons from the Great Coaches Podcast.
Doug McLean, hello and welcome back to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We're happy to have you back because, of course, you've just written the book, Draft Day: How Hockey Teams Pick Winners or Get Left Behind. It's an absolute cracker. It is to do with hockey, but the lessons and the insights in there are for all sports, I think, as we'll get into today. So congratulations. And I hear it's on the bestseller list, Doug.
Yeah, I'm really pleased. Simon & Schuster notified me there recently that, well, I followed it every week. They keep sending me notices that it's, you know, started week one on the bestseller list and 10 consecutive weeks in Canada on the Toronto Star and the Globe and Mail bestseller list. So it's really, and Indigo, which is a big book company, book sales place in Canada, the biggest, it's like a Chapters type of thing, Barnes and Noble type thing, but it's been on their bestseller list and also their Christmas wish list, which really gave it a good plug, you know, for Black Friday. And really, so I'm really pleased. And Simon Schuster just phoned me the other day and said they've done actually a second printing of the book. So that's, it's really encouraging because there was a lot of nights when I was reading this, I thought, who the hell is going to read this book? As I'd be going to sleep after working on it. So it's been kind of fun to see some success from it, you know?
Well, how did they twist your arm into getting to write it? Because you tell a lot of stories that happen behind closed doors that people would not know about.
Well, it's kind of funny. I had a group approach me about doing a life storybook in my home province in Prince Edward Island. And they said, well, I said, what's the deal? I said, well, if you give us $60,000, we'll write a book about you and then we'll split the profits. And I said, I don't think I'm going to do that. So anyway, all of a sudden, when I finished at Sportsnet, I got a call probably, you know, a week or so after from the publisher of Simon & Schuster asking if I would consider writing a book. And I said, you know, Kevin, I really have no interest in writing a book. And he said, well, let me tell you about what we're thinking first. He said, you know, you had the Moneyball book come out about baseball a number of years ago, and it was a really successful book. And we'd like to do something similar to Moneyball, not quite as much of the analytics slant, but a book like that about the draft. And that kind of intrigued me because it was my experiences in the draft, but it wasn't about me per se. So I kind of liked that approach, and it you know, so it was a lot of work. It took us 3 years to do this, you know. No, it went on. It was, and the COVID delayed it a little bit, but it was a lot of research and a lot of work. But Scott Morrison is a great writer, a great friend, and we were a real team on this. And he was pretty funny. Let me just give you a quick story before you start here. I do the first six chapters here in Florida. I outlined what I want the chapters to be, the names of it, and then I started filling in notes on each chapter, you know, what I wanted to say. So I wrote the first six chapters on my iPad, and I sent it to Scott. And the next morning, he calls me, and he said, don't you write in paragraphs when you write? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, it came as one straight line, 25,000 words, one straight line. So I said, I go with my daughter. I said, like, seriously, what's going on with my iPad? She said, Dad, you have to change the settings on your iPad to go periods and paragraphs and things. You got to do that in your notes section. So anyway, Scott didn't know what he was getting into. And then once we got that straightened out, it was a little smoother. But it was pretty funny when I thought, oh, man. So it was fun.
I want to come back to this. I want to come back to this Moneyball idea, actually, because the book is very different from Moneyball. I think because of the age and the experience of the people you're drafting. But before we get there, let's wind the clock and start at the beginning. So, Doug, where are you in the world, and what have you been up to so far today?
Well, I'm in Florida. We live in Florida 7 months of the year. The last interview we did, I was at my summer place in Prince Edward Island, the east coast of Canada. So we're exactly 2,250 miles from my cottage in Florida, in Delray Beach, Florida. And it's home here. We're here 7 months, and we're up in Prince Edward Island 4.5 months or so. So it's a great combination, to be quite honest. You get the best of PEI in the summer, and you get the best of Florida here in the winter when it's beautiful. So great golf, great beach, great. It's when you're retired, it's sort of a good place to be.
I don't mean to rub it in, Doug, but it sounds like living in Sydney all year round to me.
Exactly. That's what I'd say. It's a little bit like Australia.
So, Doug, in the book, very early on, you start off, I think it's actually on the first or second page. You start off by saying, quote, winning at the draft means having the right pieces in the front office. Now, what's interesting about your career is you coached all the way up to the Stanley Cup, and then you had this amazing career as a GM, which is a very different role from perhaps what a lot of people think about when they hear the word GM, particularly in this part of the world. But could you tell us just at the start, what are these most important pieces that you need to have in place?
Well, you know, there's a real myth out there that the general manager is the guy that makes the picks. And if the truth is known, as a general manager in the NHL, you're so busy with managing the team, managing the group, managing the coach, managing your scouting staff, managing, you know, and I was president as well, president of Columbus, as well as GM. And we were running a building where we'd have 1,000 people working for us on game nights. You know, so, we had multiple rinks in the city that we oversaw. So it was a big picture. But the number one thing with drafting is you've got to have a tremendous scouting staff. And your director of amateur scouting, Don Boyd, was my director of amateur scouting. And he and I, you know, select the staff, which is scouts that are all over the world, essentially. Not in Australia yet. But, I mean, we had scouts in Czechoslovakia, Sweden, Finland, Russia, Canada, the United States, you know, and it was about a $3 million a year budget to manage that group. And they would watch, every scout watches around 225 games a year, per se. So it's that staff that really, like as a GM, I would go out and watch the top players with my chief scout. But they make their list up, and you really, 99% of the time, you go by the list. Sometimes you don't, and you can get in trouble, but you typically go by the scouts' work, and they're dedicated, quality people.
You talk in the book, actually, about scouting. You say it's the lifeblood of a successful team, but you talk about this growing tension between, dare I say it, old school scouting, you know, feet on the street, and analytics, which is growing in all sports. But how do you define this tension, and what do the best scouts do well when it comes to managing?
Well, that's really, the analytics chapter was a really challenging chapter for me to write, because analytics, I mean, we did all kinds of great stats when I was involved, but analytics has gone to a whole nother level since I left the business. And I've always been intrigued by it. So what happened in Moneyball and baseball, it was a real battle between the old scouts and the new scouts and the analytics people and the scouts. So I started and I phoned, I had to have phoned 30 people, presidents of teams, GMs of teams, coaches of teams in the National Hockey League. And one guy would allow me to quote him, because it's a very, very intense issue within operations. Owners love analytics. Most new NHL owners are data-driven people. You know, they're in business. They're in businesses that rely on data, and they've become very data-oriented, and they love analytics. The GMs don't love it near as much. The scouts don't love it near as much, and the players don't even really like it. So I phone all these people. One guy would allow me to quote him in the book. One guy. Two guys. Rick Dudley, scout for Carolina, who's been a veteran guy and a former GM, and Brian Burke. And other than that, they'd say, Doug, I will tell you everything about what goes on with our team, but you can't quote me because I don't want this coming back to my owner. There's been a couple of GMs fired because they didn't get along with the analytics department. That's how tenuous it's been in some organizations. So I love one quote a guy gave. He said, Doug, it's like going out to dinner. It's not the steak. It's not the potato. It's not the vegetables. Not even the salad. Analytics is the salt and pepper you put on the meal. So it was being downplayed. But over the 3 years I wrote the book, I saw a dramatic change amongst the groups. And it was like, if the analytics guy has a great attitude and the scouts like him, And they started, I noticed as the book progressed, they started to work better together. And I think it all comes back to leadership in the organization. I really do. The leader, the president, general manager, is the guy that dictates how analytics is going to be accepted in the organization. And I think over time, it really evolved. I had one analytics guy say to me, and I quote him in the book. I didn't quote his name because he would have been fired. But he said, hey, I'm telling you, Doug, if the scouts, this is the head of analytics, if the scouts don't buy in to analytics, they're going to be washed out to sea. Well, that's not really the case. So but I saw it really evolve, and I saw it at the end of the book that they were starting to work together. It's going to be a part of the business. And to me, there's good information there. It's not the end all and be all, but it's a tool. It's a tool. You'll never replace scouts in the field. You never will replace scouts in the field. But it's a great tool to add and help the scouts have another look and maybe go back and look at the player again, because the numbers are saying this, the scout's not seeing that. That's what I like about it. But I'm telling you, I was talking to a scout at this year's draft. He said, Doug, they're a pain in the ass, these guys. They're a pain in the ass. So it hasn't gone 100%, but it's certainly changing to the better.
No, just listening to you, I'm reminded last summer I read Theo Epstein's book about the Cubs. Yeah. And he said he used to get his scouts together every year and he'd say to them, what are the top five players who could thrive with the change of club? I mean, how do you use analytics for something like that?
Well, yeah. And you know what? It's like the GMs all say, how do you use analytics when you look at block shots and you say, okay, he blocked a shot with his pad. What about the guy that slides down and blocks it with his face? Does that show in analytics? So, I mean, there's all kinds of intangibles that are still part of the game. I love John Madden's quote, the famous Major League Baseball manager, who's written a book, great book, by the way. And he said in it, when I talk to my analytics people, I want to know what time it is. I don't want to know how the watch was built. And I don't want them in my dressing room, and I don't want them in my clubhouse, and I don't want them on my bench. But I like the information. So, and Stevie Eisenman even talked about that. We're still a long way in the book, but we're still a long way from, you know, knowing what it's all about. So it's still a work in progress. But I tell you, I learned talking to many analytics people and many hockey people in my research that it is starting to be used more and more as a tool. And I think that's smart.
There's a great quote in the book, Doug, from Sam Pollock. And he says to you, people build teams in certain ways. I've always traded for futures, not pasts. And you talk about this quote staying with you through your career. But could you tell us how you've applied this thinking at the draft table?
Well, I think, you know, what Sam meant by that is he had a good hockey team and expansion came into the league when the league went from 6 to 12 teams and then up to 18 and then to, you know, it was expanding during his career. So what he used it for was he would trade veteran players and trade them to expansion teams for draft choices. And when you look, maybe the greatest GM in the history of hockey, Sam Pollock acquired Guy Lafleur on a future by trading a veteran player for a potential or for a future first round pick. He acquired Bob Gainey. He acquired Ken Dryden. He acquired Larry Robinson. He acquired Carboneau. He acquired the greatest players that played in that era for the Montreal Canadiens by trading veteran players and acquiring draft picks. And that's what kept the Canadiens as one of the greatest teams in the history. And Sam Pollock won 9 Stanley Cups as a general manager. Like most GMs dream of winning 1. He won 9. So, you know, and that's what it was. He, a really interesting story, and it's in the book. Ken Dryden, the greatest goaltender in the history of the Montreal Canadiens, in 1974 was drafted by the Boston Bruins. The next day, Sam Pollock traded for him. Ken Dryden didn't find out for 10 years after that he had been originally drafted by the Boston Bruins. Greatest goaltender in the history of the Canadiens was drafted by the Boston Bruins and acquired the next day and didn't know it for 10 years because in those days it was a secret draft and nobody knew who drafted who till you got a call from the team the next day or whenever saying, hey, we drafted you. So Ken gets a call saying you're a member of the Montreal Canadiens. He thought he was drafted by them and he had been drafted by Boston, who, by the way, was Montreal's biggest rival through Pollock's time in Montreal. So pretty funny.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Doug, there's a lesson in there, isn't there? And it doesn't necessarily just apply to sport. And it's around assessing the right time to give up your futures for a missing piece you've got today.
Yeah, that's really critical part of being a successful GM. Now, when I was a GM of an expansion team, I would trade a draft pick for a veteran guy, but I would trade later picks. I'd never traded one first round pick in my career because I was always petrified to do that. I probably should have traded a couple on the bad picks I made, but I did. But you know what? It was just I traded a second round pick once for a goaltender that we thought was going to be a franchise goaltender. But most of my trades were later picks, and you always tried then to work back to get that pick back maybe for another year. So you know what? But if you're a team, if you're a general manager of a contending team, and you go into the trade deadline in the NHL. They're throwing around first-round picks for fun right now. They're throwing them around. They'll trade a first-round pick to get a veteran guy, and a lot of times it comes back to bite them. It really does. I said in the book, and it's a really important – it was a premise of my premise of really the entire book. Since 1990, every Stanley Cup winner, except this past year – had at least 10 of their own draft picks on their team. That right there tells you everything you need to know about the importance of the draft. St. Louis Blues won the Cup a few years ago, first time in their franchise history. They had 10 of their own draft picks on the team. New Jersey always had 10, 12, 13 draft picks on their team. Detroit Red Wings, the great teams they had, 10, 12 draft picks on their team of their own picks. LA, the same thing. Chicago, the same thing. Multiple Stanley Cup champions, always 10 plus of their own draft picks. I was blown away that people had never heard that before. Hockey people had never heard that before. And I got that from a great friend of mine who worked for me, Bob Strum, who researched this and presented it to me. And I thought, oh, man, that is bizarre. But as a hockey guy, I didn't know that. And I'm thinking, so that was a lot of the premise of the book. How important it is to draft well and keep your players, your draft picks, to building a winner.
Doug, there's a great passage in the book. Could I ask you to read it, actually, before I ask the question?
Yeah, let me just find it here on my phone. So here's the comment. When you look back at the history of the draft, it is at best a crapshoot. But one thing is for certain. Mistakes made with the first picks, especially in the top five overall picks, can be devastating to a franchise. It can set them back for years GMs' careers and legacies are often determined by these selections. It must be remembered, of course, that GMs are selecting players who are 18 years of age and don't always develop as hoped or at the speed teams had predicted and need. That's the toughest part of scouting right there. 18-year-old kids who aren't developed.
So how do you do it, Doug? What's the criteria that you could use to try and predict whether an 18-year-old at 23, 24 is going to be one of those 10 that you mentioned?
Well, the first of all, and I mentioned this in the book, most teams say, okay, we know from 18 on, he's going to probably grow at least one more inch and gain 20 pounds. That's what they sort of think is going to happen. Well, that's fine. But I'm telling you, you just go off the basic principles. You go off skill. How is his skating? How is his puck skills? How is his shot? You look at all his skills, and that's all you. And then you really do a deep dive into his character. That's why the regional scouts are so important. The guys that are in the communities, you know, you have your chief Ontario scout, OHL scout, Ontario scout, but then you have bird dogs in communities. And their job is to find out what his parents are like, what's he like as a kid, what do his teachers say. Find out as much as you can about the kid. He's 6'1", his father is 6'4", but his mother's 5'3". How big is he going to get? You know, so you do a lot, but all you can do is project and look at the talent of that and the character of that particular player and hope that he's going to develop. And you know what? I'm telling you this. If you're 15% successful in the draft as a GM, you've had a hell of a career. 15%, that's hard to believe. And that's why GMs are always hammering away. The NFL draft is 22, 23 years of age. You know, why are we're selecting 18-year-olds? Because they're scared of labor laws. That's the whole rationale. It's crazy. And you know what? It costs a lot of GMs their jobs and a lot of coaches their jobs. I don't know what soccer is or what you guys call. What do you guys call soccer over there?
Football? Aussie rules.
Aussie rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know what? It just, you know, they're selecting soccer players, but they probably, you know, I don't know if it's any different, but it's tough. It really, really is tough. And that's why it's, when you read through the book, you read about a lot of mistakes that are made, a lot.
I didn't want to ask about the mistake because it's in the book. But I think people listening, Doug, are going to want to know, you talk about 15% success rate, but there is a decision in the book that you say cost you $30 million. Without opening any wounds, could I ask you to give us a quick sketch of it?
Well, it's pretty funny. It was a Sid Crosby draft, and Sid Crosby was an unbelievable talent, generational player. We had the sixth pick in that draft. And you know what? We ended up picking Gilbert Brulé in that draft. And my scouts, it was an unbelievable battle all year with my scouts. Brulé was considered the Sid Crosby of Western Canada. Sid was the greatest player, and he was in the eastern part of Canada. And it was a battle all year between my scouts. Crosby or Brulé? Crosby or Brulé? Those were the two names we talked about. Who was the better player? My scouts were telling me Brulé was going to be the next Steve Yzerman. People all around the hockey world love Brulé. And my scout, Don Boyd, loved a kid in Slovenia by the name of Ance Kopitar, who I went and watched at the World Championships in Sweden and met with him and his parents. And he was a terrific kid and a terrific player. And the prior year, I had Nick Jaredev, who was a Russian who I drafted, maybe the most skilled player I'd ever seen in my life. And he was a problem. First, he was in the Russian army, and there's a chapter in the book on him. But we go into the draft with Kopitar rated fifth and Brulé rated sixth. And I'm thinking, okay, it's not going to matter because Montreal will probably take Brulé at 5. And then we will take Kopitar at 6. Well, Montreal take Carey Price at 5, who went on, who was rated 22nd on our list, and all the other teams had him in the second round of the draft. And they step up and take this goaltender, and I thought, oh no, here I go. I got to make the call between, and I made the call to take Brulé over Kopitar. I was nervous. And all I said, how do I go with a Slovenian kid over a Canadian? How do I do that? I mean, this is so great. How do I? And Nick Kiprios, who was my buddy that I worked on TV with in Canada, asked me a year ago when I was writing the book what I thought it cost me to draft Kopitar or Brulé ahead of Kopitar. Brulé went 6, Kopitar went 11th. So there's a lot of guys after me that made a mistake on Kopitar as well. He went 11th in the draft. And I said, well, Nick, I think it probably personally cost me about $30 million, because if I would have taken Kopitar, I'd probably still be a GM in the NHL and I'd be making probably $5 million a year. And without that, I'm writing a book and I might make $100,000 off this book. So...
Doug, I'm sorry to have asked you the question, but I could see your body language as you were telling me about it. But look, let's move on. This in the book, what is absolutely fascinating is when you talk about the people that sit around the draft table, when you talk about all the different iterations of that, you talk about the discussions that goes on and the debate and the time pressure. It's wonderful reading. But I wanted to ask you, you've sat around that table so many times. What prevents people from thinking clearly when they're at that table?
Well, you know what? The war rooms are different because you're really discussing things. But when you get at the draft table, you typically just go off the list. The 100-man list you go in with, that gets you through 7 rounds. And it just, you know, there's debate. Typically not the first pick, typically not your second pick, but every round there's a debate as to, because what happens is you start with your 100-man list and there's guys there that are still available that you never expected to be there because somebody in the first round makes a big move and takes somebody you may have late in the second round and they picked them in the first round. So it opens up. So there's debates because your list dramatically can change by who the people ahead of you draft. And then that's when the fight started, the draft and the timeouts and the guys getting ticked off and mad at each other. It is the most exciting part of the job, sitting there at the draft and making those critical decisions. And I'm telling you, every team leaves every draft thrilled with who they selected and who they got. And then a couple years later, you're not as happy, typically.
What happens with the owner? Are they in your ear as well?
The owners typically aren't in your ear. I talked about one, there were a buddy of mine, Neil Smith, who was a longtime GM of the Rangers, and he was with the New York Islanders. And I played junior hockey with Neil. When they made their first selection, they selected TJ Oshie 7th after I had picked 6th and took Brassard, who became a real solid player in the NHL, played 1,000-plus games. And he took TJ Oshie, and the fans booed in Vancouver. And his owner was ticked off at him. He was a funny guy, his owner. He was a different cat. So Neil comes over to my table, and he said, Doug, my owner's driving me crazy. He's mad at me because is there any way you'll pop by the table and just say what a great pick I made? So I did that as a favor, which I still liked his pick. By the way, I watched his pick from that draft, 2006 draft, playing last night on TV. So it ended up being a pretty good pick. TJ Oshie, or not Oshie, but Hakposo. So I walked back and I said, Neil, that was a great pick you made at 7. Really great pick. And the owner, the owner backed off him. So you do that for your buddies. I mean, you're in the trenches battling one another for wins and losses, but you still have to, you know, you try to help the guy the odd time, you know. So the owners get in your ear after the fact when the guy doesn't turn out. because the owners are unique. Their barbers tell them what's wrong with the team. Their accountants tell them what's wrong with the team. Their wives tell them what's wrong with the team. Sometimes their girlfriends tell them what's wrong with the team. The fans are in the owner's ear, so they become part of the fans. They really do, the owners. They become hard on the head. And I work for great owners. Hard to believe. Every owner I had in my career when I wrote this book is not alive. They've passed. And I feel a little bad about that because, you know, I gave a few of them some shots in there. But anyway, you know what? They're great people when they hire you. And I always say to my coaches, don't get uptight because the owner eventually is going to hate you. He hates you just a little bit quicker than he hates me. So just get used to that, you know. Owners are tough, man. They are tough. So
now in that period you've got before you make a decision, and I know there used to be a time when you were all together in a convention center and now it's mostly online, but in that, when the clock's ticking, how do you keep everybody calm and not at each other's throat when it comes to trying to get their point across?
Well, because really what you do is you're looking at the list, and it's really the director of amateur scouting and his two key people. And you have 12 people at the table, but it's really a group of three along with the GM that really are the ones that are having the major conversation. The lesser guys, the younger scouts, the newer scouts, the regional scouts, don't pipe in. It's the GM listening, director of amateur doing the talking, and the assistant director of amateur relaying. And then they may ask a question to a guy from that region where the player's from, anything else you want to add. But it's really calm there. And then there's great excitement when you make the pick. And every draft I made had, and right up until this past year, they're in 20,000-seat buildings. Now it's going to go to the NFL format of, in you know, without the fans. But it is an unbelievable atmosphere because you've got 20,000 fans in a stadium intently, and the 32 tables on the floor of the rink, you know, down on the rink floor, and you've got the tables there, every team with their table of 12 people there, and it's really, and the fans are engaged in the draft because we talked about it and being in Montreal, and they had the first pick of the draft in Montreal, and the crowd, 20,000 people were going nuts when they were making their selection. So it's a pretty, what you do is you move into a city like on a Tuesday before the Saturday draft, and the excitement in that city is over the top, especially, you know, in every city, it takes over the fan base, and it's a really exciting time.
Doug, you finished the book with some great advice for young players. You say, ultimately, it's about an individual chasing a dream with hard work and passion. But having a dream is not enough. So many talented people think they're outworking their competition, but that shouldn't be the focus. You have to embrace the journey. You have to want to push through that early morning workout when you don't feel like it, or push through to stay late when everybody else has gone home. In many cases, it's about proving the naysayers wrong and grinding it out. True of life, I'd say, Doug, not just ice hockey, but is there a player or a story that you can leave us with that illustrates somebody who did this?
You know, I think about a couple of guys, and it was in the actual the Sid Crosby draft, and we drafted a kid by the name of Adam McQuaid, a second-round pick, and we drafted in the same draft a kid in the third round, Chris Russell. And another kid in the seventh round, Mark Mathot, and they all became NHLers. Those lesser drafted kids. I had a couple seventh round picks that made it. I had a third round pick, goaltender, became a rookie of the year in the NHL because of that, because of their character and how hard they worked and would do anything to make it. And I also said in the book, if you don't love the game, you have no chance to play in the NHL. You've got to love the game because of the sacrifices you have to make And not only that, your parents are a key part of it. I say to my son, who's an agent in Chicago, Clark, if you run into you want a player and his parents are crazy, run from him, because there's a good chance you're going to have major problems with that kid. So, you know what, I tried to do a little advice chapter at the end, and I've had a couple people actually send me notes saying, Doug, that chapter should be on every dressing room wall in Canada, talking about, you know, the parents and the advice to kids and coaches. I really enjoyed that chapter, to be quite honest. It's not an advice, it's more, I guess it is advice, but just advice of my 24 years in the NHL as to what I saw. But I actually really liked writing that chapter.
Doug, it's a great read. I will put the link in the show notes. Doesn't matter whether you're into hockey or not. For anybody that's interested in how the draft works, or even the process of selecting people to join your team, it's a great read. And I wish you all the best chasing down that $100,000.
Yeah. Okay, man. I appreciate the support, and I didn't envision selling a lot of books in Australia, but now I'm counting on you getting that done for me over there. So give it a chance. You can. Most people just. In the U.S., they're buying it on Amazon. I don't know how you get it in Australia, but I'm sure you can get it off the link there. It shows you where you can buy it. But if you take melatonin to sleep at night, put the melatonin away and read the book, and you'll have a beautiful night's sleep as you pass out.
I don't think that's true, Doug, but we'll leave it on that point. Great to catch you again. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it, man. Take care.
Hi, everyone. You have been listening to Doug McLean talk about his new book, Draft Day. I hope you got a lot out of it and found a few ideas that you can bring back to your own workroom table, lunchroom, or locker room for discussion. Doug has terrific energy. There were some great stories there, particularly on how he goes about selecting people. And just before we go, if you have any feedback, then please let us know. We love the interaction with the people around the world who listen. It keeps us going. So if you have any comments, you can see the details on how to connect with us in the show notes or on our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.